Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are doing a special broadcast this evening with our friends from Egypt, live from Cairo, to give you an update. Of course, Mubarak spoke this afternoon, as did Suleiman. Mubarak is not resigning. Suleiman has called for people to all go home. We are talking with the same people we talked to just the other day. We're talking with Kol Igar, Dina Yehia, Yehia Salahuddin, her father, and maybe some others as well. And right now we have Kol Igar on the phone with us from Cairo. Kol, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's I can't say I'm on under the best of circumstances. I wish it could have been slightly happier news, but it's good to be here.
What was it like watching Mubarak? So talk to me about what it was like as you were watching him with your friends and their families on television.
Well, it started out very exciting. All of today, we've been anticipating this speech. The rumors have been going around, the comments by other people in the government, even some of the higher-up military saying that they expected him to step down. So we came into this speech really expecting some significant good news, that he would be stepping down. And I think for me personally, it was quite confusing watching the speech, because in my heart, I kept listening to what he was saying and trying to tell myself, how is what he is saying meaning that he was stepping down? Because at every point he was saying, you know, I know what it's like to be a youth. It's only youth who are, you know, out there. It's this small group of youth, and I can identify with that. And you know, I'm one of you. And it switched kind of from confusion to about halfway through to all of us starting to realize that this was not the speech we were expecting.
Go ahead.
Oh, just transitioning from confusion into anger, I think, at this point.
Why did people assume that he would actually step down?
I think a big part of it was just hope. For all of us who were down there on Tuesday was huge. I mean, this past Tuesday, a couple days ago, it was as many people as any day we've seen. And I think the energy of that and just the festive attitude had given a lot of us hope. After things had waned a little leading up to that Tuesday, we saw again that even when energies start to dwindle, it can be rallied up again. And this was moving us forward. And then on top of that, we started getting word of all these different reports from within the administration, reports that people had seen his private jet, landing in the airport, reports, you know, from generals that he hadn't been at the big meeting that they all had, and these sorts of things.
So I've had this email conversation going on with a lot of Arab Americans during the course of the day, and others, as we were talking about what we were going to do today. One friend who is from Iraq, Najwa Al-Amin, who also lived in Cairo for a while herself, was saying that she just did not believe that Mubarak was ever going to step down. That Al-Arabi early on had said that, you know, he was just going to do just what he said he was going to do. He did just what Al-Arabi said, reported that he was going to say, which he's not going to leave till September. He'll step aside to give it to Suleiman, and Suleiman then coming on to tell all the people to go home. I wonder what you think is what happens now. What happens tomorrow?
I think, well, what happens as we speak is sort of an ironic twist on what Omar Suleiman said. He cried out to the protesters, go home. And I think what we're seeing right now is they're going home, but it's not their home. It's Mubarak's home. And then I think on top of that, tomorrow, I anticipate we're going to see record numbers. I mean, I hope it doesn't turn violent, but I think everyone who before was not sure if it was the right time to come out, I think now knows that if there was ever a time to do it, it's tomorrow.
Will you be out there tomorrow?
I will be out there tomorrow, inshallah. I mean, unless people are getting gunned down in the streets, I'll be out there tomorrow.
Have you been able to see what the reaction has been around the country?
Not yet. No, they've just we've been talking to friends of ours in Tahrir. We were going to go down to Tahrir, but we decided we'll stay, we'll watch the speech, and go down there for the party. Otherwise, I have not seen anything else from around the country.
I mean, we saw that in Alexandria that there were massive demonstrations going on today as well, and all throughout Egypt. There's a Facebook page that I've been following, which is "We Are All Khaled Said," and they've been covering things from around Egypt on that Facebook page. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
I'm sorry. What was that? I couldn't quite hear that.
I was saying that there's a Facebook page. "We Are All Khaled Said." And on that page, they've been covering what's going on all through Egypt. And what they just wrote here was that the Tahrir is shaking from the shouting. Protesters chanting, "Tomorrow we will go to the palace in millions. Tomorrow we'll have to kill millions of martyrs. He is leaving no other option. He is not leaving this country in one piece. His speech was me, 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 all about me. His personal pride and ego are making him removed from reality."
Yeah, that was definitely how a lot of us were listening to it here. I mean, there was that little bit of apology, and if you can even say apology, he expressed some remorse for the martyrs, but in no way accepted any responsibility. And otherwise, everything we were hearing was, you know, how great he had been in the military, which is, I mean, this is a valid point, but I think, you know, as anyone who's read the Bible sees, you know, from stories like David, you can be a great leader one day and the next, you know, day you're a tyrant, and that does not, you know, your successes of the past do not necessarily excuse a slow deterioration. Yeah, I think we were definitely all very dissatisfied with the focus of his speech.
What about the role of the army from your perspective? The army's been making comments.
Well, I think...
Go ahead.
I think up until now, I mean, people have been very proud of the role of the army, especially after seeing what happened with the police. The police, you know, largely disgracing themselves about 2 weeks ago by just leaving all of the protesters, abandoning the neighborhoods to be taken over by gangs and militias. So the military had been in good standing. There was, of course, that doubt about what happened back on Wednesday, but otherwise, they were in everyone's good graces, and I think now the real test is going to come. I mean, if people are marching on the palace as they appear to be, will they choose to stand by the people or will they choose to stand by the president? And I think the next few hours are going to show us where that actual loyalty lies.
Because they made a lot of very strange statements during the course of the day as I was watching Al Jazeera. Statements that I'm not quite sure what they portend. I mean, they were talking about that they had to stand up to keep Egypt strong, and they were going to safeguard Egypt, and they were going to listen to the people's demands. But it's unclear what they really mean by all that.
Yeah, I mean, again, I guess partially just from our perspective of being very hopeful, we were interpreting this as that they were, you know, throwing down on the side of the protesters. I mean, again, some comments had even come out of the military saying that they expected the protesters' demands to be met. So, I don't know, I guess now in retrospect, maybe what they were saying is if it comes down to a shootout, they will do their best to protect the people.
Were you down in Tahrir today?
I was not down there today, no.
It sounds like the crowds were perhaps even larger than yesterday. From the pictures we were seeing on Al Jazeera.
Yeah, I think a bit larger than yesterday. Well, and I think one thing that was significant about today is generally kind of the ebb and flow of the crowds is that throughout the night, it dwindles over the night and then starts peaking in the afternoon, hits sort of a critical mass in the, around maybe late afternoon, evening, and then dwindles again in the night. And I think what we saw today was it started out, smaller, numbers from yesterday and just kept building throughout the day. And that has been a very significant change. I mean, just all of this anticipation and expectation about what was expected tonight.
I wonder, just for a moment, I mean, I want to remind our guests who you are, Cole. I mean, Cole Agar, you joined us the other day, and we found you through our friend Eden Unger Bowditch, and you were actually, you're a graduate of the American University in Cairo, a graduate student. I mean, you graduated from graduate school at the American University in Cairo. You were back in the United States, and when you saw what erupted in Egypt, you flew back to be with your friends.
That is all correct, except for I graduated from the undergraduate.
Undergraduate, okay.
Yes, so I was here for 4 years, four very amazing years.
And let me just ask you this before we talk to Dina and bring you back on the phone a little bit later. What? Tell me what it was that drove you to Egypt in the first place.
I think how it began, I'm from kind of rural America, small town Wisconsin, and had always just felt very isolated from all the events in the rest of the world. And I think a lot of people would have a similar story that after 9/11, I realized just how little I understood international relations, how little I understood the Muslim world and the Arab world. And I was pretty patriotic back then. I still am. But at the time, I really felt kind of this duty to put myself into this this region that I had so little understanding for. And that was a big part of what brought me over here.
So who's with you now at the house?
Right now, I am with Dina Yahya and her family. Would you like me to turn it over to Dina?
I'd love to talk to Dina for a little bit. That'd be great.
All right. Here she is.
Hello?
Dina Yahya, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I know, to a degree. We were talking with Dina Yahya, who is, of course, a graduate of the American University in Cairo and has lived in her homeland all of her life. And joins us here. I want to hear your initial reactions to what to when you were watching Mubarak speak, and then Suleiman.
Okay. Like I did not listen to the first half of Cole, so like I don't know what has been said and what has not been said.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
for the first half, like before we were saying in anticipation, like I was staying with my friends initially, and I was asking everyone, and everyone was asking everyone, do you think he's actually going to step down? And everyone thought he actually was going to step down. My friend's grandmother, she started crying and praying for like the country to be safe. She's like, she felt sorry for the way he has to go. Everyone knew everyone believed he was going to step down. I have to say, I felt very I was very skeptical. It didn't make sense to me that he would actually step down. I couldn't help but be hopeful just because of all the hopefulness around me. But, like, the thing is, Omar Suleiman and Ahmed Tassi, their speeches for the past couple of days until today, they were emphasizing the fact that the army, they were emphasizing the fact that Mubarak was not going to step down. Mubarak met with Ahmed Tassi and Omar Suleiman today. And Shafi was still stating on national state television that he that Mubarak will not step down. And so was the minister of media, or I don't know what they call it. And then Ahmed Abulghit, our foreign minister, he was making statements like the U.S. should look upon this like neutrally. Why would he say that if Mubarak was going to step down? Why would Omar Suleiman in his speech, in his like declaration, say that we have the people who are saying that Mubarak needs to step down now, they don't understand, or like that is not Egyptian ethics. Like, seriously. And he's like, the people don't understand Egyptian ethics and the army. And we have to remember that President Mubarak was in the 1973 war. And I'm sure the army remembers that too. Lots of references to how the army was on their side. And then the army makes their declaration, their statement today. And everyone was like, Mubarak's not there. So that's a statement. That's like saying something, and that they're saying that they're on the side of the people. But they said nothing about the revolutionaries or the people in Tahrir. They said the people. And the thing is, now that this has happened, and Mubarak came out and said that the minority are the people in Tahrir Square, and that the majority, the winning majority, believe, know who Hosni Mubarak is, and know what Hosni Mubarak did for his country. So he made it his rhetoric. There were like lots of analysts coming out and saying that his rhetoric was somewhere between being playing on emotions for sure, which is something he failed to do in his first speech and was very criticized for not doing. And so he did it this time, and he will win a lot of compassion and sympathy from the people. But I kind of lost track of my line of thought because my mom is writing something for me to say.
It's okay. But go ahead.
Honestly, this was, this is just, if he's being stubborn, like people from the people who we talked to down in Tahrir, I haven't talked to anyone. Cole texted, like, was in contact with one of her friends down in Tahrir, and he said that people are very what did he say? People are very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then
people are very angry, but people are also very stubborn.
Yeah. If Hosni Mubarak is stubborn, so are like this is something that is known about Egyptian people. They're stubborn, and the people that are going to be there also be stubborn. But the risk now is, my dad keeps saying, I don't know what they're called in English, but it's Ahkam Urfiya, which is like martial. Oh, my dad says martial laws.
Mm-hmm.
So now the army, the risk is the army that it made a statement that it was on the side of the people, and now that Mubarak came out and said, I fulfill what the people want. So now the army is going to say like job done, and like that they're doing their job. But then they'll start applying. Again, I lost track of my thread, but yes, I feel like on some level, like either Mubarak and the government are trying to provoke people into becoming like angry and violent, because it's very stressful living in Tahrir. Like, again, I reference this tomorrow as like kind of like a humorous thing, but it really is a serious matter. The like having to go to the bathroom, sleeping, mm-hmm. not sleeping very well. All of these things are things that work on your nerves. And today the people, like the higher the expectation was that he was actually going to step down, so people wanted Tahrir so that they could celebrate with the other people who have been there from the beginning of the day. And now there's a huge amount of people. Like, usually by night it thins down, when it comes by night time it thins down, but now it's like the other way around. And like the frustration, or like the disappointment, I can imagine, of them being there and him saying that. And then it could build up, like it could very easily build up into some people. Like, I think Cole was saying something about people heading towards the presidential palace. Like, on the Arabic side, they're not showing that they are, but this is very expected. So on the one hand, I don't know why Mubarak said this, because he's going to provoke some rogue person who's going to say, I'm going to sacrifice myself and go kill the president. Because the president would not, because Mubarak is failing and is not wanting to like cooperate. On the other hand, I feel like they want to like provoke the people, so they start getting violent. So then they could say, we need to apply martial law according to the constitution when the state reaches the state of like lack of security, the army has to interfere, and then the curfew that is kind of like applied, like it's lax and it's not really applied. Like people still don't go out, but like the military won't shoot someone if they see them on site during curfew hours. This might be the case. And people are now worried. So before, again, and I feel like this, the fact that he made the speech today, before tomorrow, before like the Friday where everyone was going, my mom was one of the people who was initially did not feel, she was like, no, we can't go, it's going to be risky. Then she went to bed and she was like, yes, we're all going to go. She got tons of flags and she was like, we're going to go. And then now they're saying that the army, like, we don't know what's going to happen. They're going to like shoot people or whatever. So she's backing out or down again. And my dad was very sure and very clear. And it came back from, I think it was the day before yesterday when we all went, and he came back and called all his friends and he's like, we have to go. Even his friends, like all the like middle class people. And he was like, we all have to go. And now he's like, let's wait and see what's going on. Not out of anything, just because we don't know what's going to happen. I feel like this was meant to also, so this, to like playing again the fear factor and using like actual physical force to deter people from going, which was what they used at the beginning. Then they started using like psychological deterrence, mm-hmm. and that worked pretty darn well. And then they're just going back and forth and mixing the two. Like, I was talking with our housekeeper today, and she's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I'm confused. Whatever the people want, we want. We don't want violence. We just don't want violence. We don't want chaos. And now with the eruptions in Alexandria, in Bursa'id, in Kharqiyya, in all the places, this is because the government is being so slow in responding and being responsive to what the people want. And they know that. And, like, they for sure know that because in Tahrir, it's one spot, and it's controlled, and they have the military there. But then you have eruptions of people now asking, and like factionalization, people now asking for like higher wages, or the people in Port Said who burned the governorate headquarters, and
yes.
then they burned the police headquarters, and then asked for like apartments in Cairo, and was given apartments in Cairo by the government, which prompted some other group of people to go burn some other place and ask for some more apartments. So like, the government is not responding to this the right way, and clearly it is not seeing, like, clearly it's not being honest in its in the way it's dealing with the people and the demands, because it's like double rhetoric, and I don't know, I don't understand why he's being so stubborn.
Well, clearly, I mean, I think one of the things that the at least the analysts here have been saying is that the Mubarak Suleiman regime is very powerful, and they want to keep the status quo. And in many ways, the United States of America, Israel, Saudi Arabia, they want to keep the status quo. And those men are the status quo. And if they think they can, is it that they can maneuver in keeping people divided and keeping people off guard? They'll do it. I mean, they're not going to give up power easily. That's clear.
But, like, they're going, like, once the army starts shooting, the country will fall apart, because the army was the one institution in Egypt that the people in Tahrir trusted. It was the one institution that everyone on the demonstrator side, even on the non-demonstrator side, like, that's the one institution that has been holding Egypt together. Once they do that, like, I was talking with this with Cole and other people today, that this should be, like, I could not believe that the government would use that card, because that would be the stupidest political move ever, because no one wins. But then again, if they're going to lose anyways, I find it hard to believe that they would be willing to let the country burn, to do whatever it is that they want, that I can't understand, the whatever power politics, whatever backstabbing that might not actually be backstabbing. It might be like a facade or a charade to like further confuse the already very confused masses.
Mm-hmm.
But like once the army starts shooting, just things will fall apart. That like who else can, like what else can happen? What else can be worse than that? And if the order comes and the like higher up people are, like the general consensus that the people higher up in the army, they're more on Mubarak's side. So two scenarios. Either, like, the order would come to, like, shoot against the traitors and the spies who are making, forcing the country to fall into chaos and letting all, like, outside forces and, like, just, like, bad for the country. They're the evil ones that need to be shot. So either an order will come and the army would obey and start shooting at the people, very bad, or else the army would split. The actual soldiers who are on the ground and have been interacting with the demonstrators and, like, carrying children and like, drinking water from the demonstrators and seeing them chant and seeing them call, say, like, and the army and the people one hand and chant slogans honoring the army, they might find it harder to obey, and then you have a split in the army, which is equally terrible. So whatever is going to happen next, if the army gets involved further than that and starts shooting, it just will not be good. It cannot be good for anyone involved.
Yeah, I would like to add a little story to what Dina was just saying.
Sure.
About kind of the split between the upper echelons of the army and the actual soldiers on the ground. Part of the reason that I did not go to the demonstrations today is I was meeting with a friend in one of the outer-lying regions of Cairo, and on the way back from that meeting, curfew had descended, and we encountered some of the military roadblocks. And when we stopped at one of the military roadblocks, we got into a little conversation with the soldiers there about what would be happening tonight. And the driver of our vehicle said, well, you know, they say he is stepping down. We hope he is stepping down. And all of the soldiers said, inshallah, like, God willing, he's stepping down tonight.
The soldiers were saying that.
Soldiers sitting at the tanks guarding the road on the street.
So let me, as I said, we have to take, during the course of this conversation, a very brief break. We're going to do it right now and come right back. We are talking with people on the ground in Cairo. You just heard the voice of Kolagar, who is a graduate of American University in Cairo, and Dina Yahia, who is also a graduate of the American University, has lived in her homeland of Egypt all her life. In a moment, we'll also speak with Dr. Yahia Salah el-Din, her father, who is an ophthalmologist in Cairo. Stay with us. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. Welcome back. We are here with our guests, Dina Yahia, Kolagar, and soon Dr. Yahia Salah el-Din. The issue of the army, I mean, this is a critical piece, because there's some analysts here saying that the army could just take over in a dictatorship. Others are saying the army could split, and that no one knows just how, I mean, no one can really sense what the army will do. Is that true?
I'm sorry, just a second. We are switching phones.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello. How are you?
Hello, I'm Dr. Yahia.
Yes. So we now have on the phone with us Dr. Yahia Salah el-Din, who is an ophthalmologist and the father of Dina Yahia, and Kolagar remains on the phone as well. What I was just saying was that the great unknown here is the army and what they will do. Will they seize power themselves? Will they listen to Suleiman? Will the army split? I'm curious what you think, in your experience, Dr. Yahia Salah el-Din. What do you think might happen?
I am in a very bad mood. I'm very depressed because everybody was expecting something different. But on the other hand, we have to analyze what the alternatives. One of the bad alternatives is the army takes over. In this sense, it takes over completely, and so we can go again into military rule for a long time compared to what's in hand now. The problem is that the always the political speech to the people or contact to the people always delayed. Probably if this is 1 week earlier, if this the same proposal, the same way of, except it might have made some acceptance. But
I would disagree. I don't want to cut my dad off, but I would disagree because Mubarak did not say anything new today. He only played on the emotional factor and recognized that the people like died and said that their blood wouldn't go in vain and whatnot. But he didn't say anything. He said that the constitutional amendments were underway, that he started the constitutional amendments, which have been underway for a couple of days now. This was not any new news. And he said that he's going to cancel Article 179, which was the emergency law article from the Constitution. But it doesn't matter because there's still a law there, and we are in a state of emergency. So it wouldn't matter because he would use it anyway. He was just throwing a bone. It doesn't matter. For the next 6 months, it's going to be a state of emergency, and he will use it anyway, not as a constitutional law, but as a law nonetheless. So, like, he did not say anything other than, like, get himself down.
Delegating Soliman.
He already delegated Soliman. That was not a new thing. Like, how is that a new thing?
Well, what was your father? What were you trying to say?
Yes, I was saying that what he stated directly that he's delegating Soliman, the vice president, to take over the presidency mission. What's allowed in the constitution? The problem is that now, really, it's the army school now. Because the people are very angry, and there could be some split again due to this emotional split among people who are not really into the event. But the problem is that everybody was ready to go into the streets tomorrow for demonstrations anyway. So the problem now after this, it could turn very bad. What in my head is all bad scenarios now, unfortunately. So,
when you say you think it could turn very bad, what do you think very? What does that mean?
I'm sorry.
When you say you think things could turn very badly, and
there are two things that I'm worried about. That one is that things go out of control because there are more and more people are getting more outrageous, and then they can really go. Everything is going peaceful so far from the demonstrators, but starting from yesterday, he started some uncontrolled violence in certain remote areas away from Cairo, and other people are angry from their jobs, different demands, the personal demands, the sector demands. Then they will erupt from everywhere. This is something that we don't want, and the revolution, they don't want this. Everyone wants a better Egypt, and the spirit is very high, very constructive. But in this way, delaying the actions, and what they are only doing is fueling people more frustration, feeling that they didn't get anything in response of what they are fighting for, and this is very bad because we don't want to see our country going into mess. Because this was completely a peaceful movement. And the political response was always very late, not to the standards of the people's expectations. And not like the decision is not taken in the right moment. And the option, of course, of the army taking over like a coup, the problem is this, that you cannot then guarantee the civil transformation, as all the people wanted to have a civil constitution, civil rule, civil president, and democracy, true democracy. So, I am myself very confused and very depressed. As the spirit was very high before the speech.
You could sense that. What you're feeling, you could sense in the crowds as I was watching Al Jazeera before I spoke to you. You could see the change in the mood of the people immediately. But will this, are all three of you still on the line? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm here as well.
So I wonder if you think that the coalition that we have seen, this group that has come together spontaneously of people who are liberals and socialists and communists and Muslims and Christians and Muslims and men and women, some more secular, some more religious, holding together. Do you think this holds together through all of this?
Yes, it will hold I believe it will hold. But what I don't know is what is the price for this will be. I don't know if there are, will be like the supporters of the regime that went, a lot of thugs or people who believe that this is better for the country and started to use violence with the administration. I don't know if this is going to be repeated. I don't know if the police, secret police, will go and start mass arrests or the army. I don't know the scenarios, and for me, it's not very clear. Everybody is very confused. The feelings are very contradictory.
Well, and I think another problem as well is that up until this point, the thing that has united all of those various groups and factions is this united belief that it is the time for Mubarak to go. And in recent days, I would say the united hope that finally he would go. So after the speech tonight, and especially after some of the factionalization that we've already seen creeping in the last couple of days.
What do you mean,
I think
factionalization?
One worry that I have is that that some of this this kind of united dream will have gone, that people will see Mubarak is simply too stubborn to leave, and what now? I mean, that was the thing uniting us.
I disagree. I don't. Like, honestly, walking into Tahrir is like walking, it's like walking into heaven. And
it's walking into what, Dina?
It's not an exaggeration. People are so, like, people from all walks of life. They're there, they're talking, they're very clear on the one thing. Like, I would agree that maybe factionalization would occur after Mubarak steps down, but the fact that he's being so stubborn will just make people more united. Like, there is no reason for the one goal that they were clear on, and as I was saying yesterday, people were not expecting to be going home soon. This is, like, mass international media that built up the hope in the last couple of hours before the speech. This was not an expectation like yesterday or even today morning. People were expecting to wait for like weeks on end. There are like titles and names for next Friday and the next Friday and like weeks of like solidarity and whatnot. So like the reason for the unification is still there, and like people in Tahrir, when I was there, I think like last week or a couple of days ago, people were like, we don't want to go home. One of the persons said that, and then the other person was like, but that's bad. I was like, that's a bad sentiment, because eventually we do want to get home. So another person pitched in and was like, whenever a person, like every year we come in solidarity and like came together in Tahrir to just remember the sentiment and the feeling of being one people and like one Egyptians, and the feeling of absolutely like just love and not thinking about different classes, different religions and whatnot. Another person said, like, as a joke, he's like, from now on, anyone who has like problems or fights with their parents or fights with their brothers or has any problem, Tahrir will be like our home. Tahrir will be the home of the people who have some grievance, even if not a political one. The spirit is still there, and I feel like this will only make it stronger, if only just more somber and not as festive. It'll be hard to be as festive tomorrow, perhaps, than it was like today, but it'll still be there.
That's very interesting. I as I listen to the three of you and all the different perspectives that you bring to this, let me ask you this shift. I'm very curious from what I've been seeing on this in Tahrir Square and Alexandria and around Egypt in the pictures. My friends who speak Arabic here have been translating some of the signs, and you do get a sense that many people are very disappointed in President Barack Obama and the American administration and their response to this. Is that true? I mean, how do you all feel about that?
Actually, I can answer this. Actually, the people here were not putting a lot of hope on President Obama or the American administration, because everybody knows that it has a strong relation, and there is a pressure from Israel, from other Arab countries, pressuring, because the regime is a friend and is stable, and they don't want the unknown. So the people actually did not count on external or outside the interference or pressure. They wanted to get it. They know that they have to get the freedom by themselves. But of course, the people that are disappointed of the situation, that is the position of the American administration, is that switching from one stage to another according to what's going on. One day with the regime, second with the people, third day with the regime, fourth day with the people. So everybody knew it's the position, all the decisions of supporting the people depends only how strong is the regime they think they are. And so everybody does not count on this. They count on the people's support, people of the United States, people of the free world, but they don't count on any of the administration. This was very clear all through this event, because it was very clear how they acted at the beginning, nobody commenting about the quality of the police or the death of the people. But then when the uprise was more and there are more asking peaceful demonstrations to get the freedom, I think maybe it could be the pressure of the people of these free countries pressuring their administration. But we don't count on the administration. Definitely none of the people demonstrating in any part of Egypt is counting on the American administration to play it fairly for the rights of human beings.
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, you make it sound like the government itself is evil.
There is interest, and this is political, so you cannot go into this. You cannot count into political.
But you can't say that, because whatever stance they take, you end up criticizing them. Like, my stance, and Cole and I maybe would disagree on this, but like, that the government, the administration, should just back off and not try to make a statement at every stage and every point, because it's not helpful. Because if they say they're on the side of the people, then the government and the pro-Mubarak would say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. They're planting spies, and the people are being paid dollars and Kentucky meals and are working for the Americans. If they say that they're with the government, then the people say, oh, they don't care about the people, the other side. So, like, whatever it does, it's going to be held against it, and it makes it seem it's just focused on the fact that this is really and truly just a people's movement, and they don't have, like, I can't tell you about the many, many jokes about, like, Cole, when he came to demonstration with us, people would look at him and say, like, American, and they're like, where is your agenda that you're giving us? Or, like, where are the dollars? You want dollars. And then they get out Egyptian pounds from their pockets and say, these are our dollars. And this is, it's just, like, very black and black comedy, and it's sad, but it's also, like, they're still maintaining their sense of humor. Like my dad said, people support, like, we saw demonstrations in Madison, and it was on YouTube, where I think I got an email or something like that, and it was very small, and the people were very, and it looked very cold, and the people looked like they were, like, terribly, they looked like they were freezing, but that was enough. That was the type of support that I would feel good seeing and enjoy and feel like I have the support of the people, whereas administration, you just get into, like, not knowing what, like, it's just not helpful.
Well, and I think I actually do agree with Dina. and I think, in addition to just not being helpful, I think, as we saw tonight, there actually is some harm there. I mean, I have to say, I was proud when Obama originally came out on the side of the Egyptian people, and I think this is almost part of the problem. I think some of the rhetoric of the American government, I think quite a lot of it, is not actually meant for Egypt. I think it is meant for America. It is meant for us to be proud of our human rights record and you know, our humanitarian ethic. But I think, as we saw from the speech today, one of the things that Mubarak actually hid behind was that we will not bow down to the will of the outsiders. I mean, if none of this pressure had been there, if other countries had maybe made a little comment but left it to the Egyptian people, he would not have had this excuse. Whereas the way that he's framing the dialogue now is that it is not me versus the Egyptian people, it is us, the Egyptian people, versus the outside. And this, I think, is a very dangerous way of changing the conversation, because that absolutely is not what it was about.
But
yes, you're absolutely right.
What about the larger forces at work here? I mean, I think that you see in the unity of the Egyptian people is clear from throughout the world as we're watching this. And we see the trade union movements on strike, and we see young and old people together and all classes of people. You see this incredible thing going on. And the world, I think, those of us around the world here, we stand with you. I mean, it is mind-boggling for us to watch and joyous, in a sense, for us to watch, because we're seeing how people in Egypt are standing up for freedom and democracy. It's just amazing. On the other hand, when you look at the power that Mubarak and Suleiman and that crew have, the billions of dollars that they are stealing from Egypt and making money, the role they play as a bulwark with Israel and the United States and the U.S. addiction to oil. I mean, there's a lot of power on the top here that is resisting your confronting your nation for freedom. I mean, there's a lot happening here that I think many people don't talk about in that way. Does that make any sense?
I'm not entirely sure I got the question. And partly mainly because I can't hear you very well.
I'm sorry. What I was saying, I'll try to make it simpler then, that the power that Mubarak and Suleiman have tied up to the power base for America in the Middle East, the billions of dollars they've stolen. This is a very powerful group, and I'm wondering how you think that the power of the nonviolence of the people of Egypt can push them out.
Can push out the interest group.
Can push out Mubarak and Suleiman.
Can push out. Maybe my dad has something to say.
No. It's not. I mean, there's nothing to be done before we see how the army will react, and also the people will continue in the administration. But the problem, the main problem, is that one fears that chaos happens. That people who are not into this, they start to do problems in different places. I mean, it's each step of on the way, at each moment before each speech of him, we thought that this was enough to get to push them away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very foggy. Very foggy now, but I think it's very difficult to have a way back. But actually, as I told you, it's very, very critical situation now. The moods are very volatile, feelings uncontradictory, feelings about fear about the country, and feeling about losing the dream of a real democracy and freedom, because the spirit that was there, I don't know if we can restore it back at this stage. I mean, everybody was inspired for a real, and Egypt has a lot of resources, human resources, natural resources. You don't have to have oil to be rich. We have a lot of things, and we trust. I mean, everybody felt back trusting the people. We have a lot of minds. We have a lot of things that we can do to the country. The first time that we really, for a long time, we really outside football or soccer, that people feel this country belongs to them.
Mm-hmm.
And to add to what my dad just, because he was
sure.
About all the resources and about like how we don't need oil and money. Like the recent, I think it was BBC that revealed that Mubarak's fortune is like 40 to 70 million. And then people in Tahrir, there was like some people who were jokingly saying, oh, if you split Mubarak's fortune on everyone, like each and every Egyptian will get like 500,000 or something like that. And another one pitched in and he was like, we don't want his money. Like, he could leave with his money. Like, people, even though there is a minority that wants to, like, have him, like, executed or like, tried or whatever, most people just want him out. They don't want his money. They're not asking for anything, just for him to step down. For him to step down, and he is, like, a symbolic, he is the beginning of that is the one point that people are common and very clear about, that he needs to go, and no, like, money, and people are, have faith in themselves that we don't need his money, we will build this country again. We will do, we will, and like even little things like standing in line, which Egyptians are notorious for not following, and like in driving, you just don't, you just don't stand
right.
in line. That's not something that you do. And like in Tuesday, the amount of people there was insane. And then when one Egyptian would try to cut the line, other people in the line would say, the line Egyptian, the line, respect the line Egyptian.
This is amazing.
It's
amazing.
Behavior.
Yeah,
it
changed. Maybe it sounds very little, but...
No. I understand. Go ahead. I'm sorry. We have about 2 minutes left.
Oh, I was going to say, to add to Dina's comments about that it's not about the money.
Yes.
It's about the people. I think what I would say and what the demonstrators have shown is that the way you deal with a regime that wields this amount of power and this amount of resources is you stand firm. I mean, they control the money of the country. I mean, they control the business deals. But that doesn't mean anything if they don't control the people. I mean, if the people aren't working, what do you scrape off the top? If American businesses aren't building, their big overseas headquarters here, there's nothing to corrupt. There's nothing to siphon off to begin with. And I think at the end of the day, it's about the people. Your billions don't do you any good if you don't have a country in which they matter.
We're just about out of time, and I do. First of all, I want to tell the three of you that what you all are doing in Egypt is inspiring to all of us and to the rest of the world. And what I can promise, at least from our end, is that we will talk to you and whoever we can in Egypt every day to keep this to keep your voices alive from this end. And we just really honor what you're doing. And anything we can do to help, we will do. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank the three of you, Dr. Yahya Salah Khaldin, Dina Yahya, and Kolagar for joining us. Stay safe, and we'll be talking to you again tomorrow and the days to come.
Okay, thank you.
And hopefully someday soon we'll meet you in a free Egypt together.
Yeah.
Inshallah.
Inshallah.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. We've been talking to our friends in Egypt today to see what happened after the Mubarak speech, and we are going to sign off now, and I have to say that we want to thank Brian Boone for engineering over at Morgan. We're here at our studios at Clean Cuts Music and Sound, where our producer, Justin Levy, has been engineering from this end. We're produced, of course, by Justin Levy and Christina Arison for the Center for Emerging Media. And you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show here on 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And thank you all very much. Stay glued to all of this. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's New E-Zines. You can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com.